is Ryan Miller, and for the past 15 years, I've helped hundreds of people to raise millions of dollars for their funds and for their startups. If you're serious about raising money, launching your business, or taking your life to the next level, this show will give you the answers so that you too can enjoy your pursuit of making billions. Let's get into it. In this week's episode, I bring on Dr. Marvin Washington, PhD. Join Dr. Washington and I as we cover how to construct a market-winning strategy that will set you up to dominate your competitors and gain massive market share in your business, be it a startup or otherwise. You don't want to miss it. Plus, Dr. Washington and I share the hottest strategy framework to make it easy for you to diagnose problems within your company or any company you want to invest in, so that you too will have the strategic planning skills you need in your pursuit of making billions. Here we go.
Hey, welcome to another episode of Making Billions. I'm your host, Ryan Miller, and today I have a special treat. Today I have my dear friend, Dr. Marvin Washington. Dr. Washington is a professor of strategy at Portland, in the University of Portland. He's a speaker. He's a consultant. He's the author of many books, Lead Self First Before Leading Others, Successful Organization Transformation, and Leading Peak Performance. This guy is a strategy expert. He teaches strategy. He lives strategies. He does everything, all things strategy. He's worked in many diverse backgrounds. I'll let him get into it. But his research has led him to be published in leading academic journals such as the Academy of Management Journal, Organizational Science, and Organizational Studies. Dr. Washington, welcome to the show, man.
Oh, thanks for having me on the show. I'm really excited to be here, and I really appreciate the wonderful introduction.
Yes. Yeah. You know, it's been a while. We've gotten to know each other for a few years now, and I can say that you certainly are someone that I like to refer to as expert, and those are the only people that come on a show called Making Billions. I mean, you don't make it this far without being an expert. Now, I think being an expert, many of our fans around the world would like to know what. How did you become an expert for maybe people just starting out? Maybe you can walk us through a little bit of how you got started, and then we can talk about specifically some of the strategic analysis that's required by both funders and founders. We're going to get into that in a minute. But before we do, let's talk about a little bit of that hero's journey. Where did you come from? How did this start? And what led you to be the dynamo you are today?
Excellent. And I will describe my journey as sort of two Marvins. And I think the split and the coming together of the split really makes sense and is relevant for today. Sure. And so in the beginning, where were the two Marvins?
Yeah,
I ran track in college, and that's what led me to start my college career at Purdue University and eventually end up at Northwestern University. I was also somewhat of a geek, a nerd. And so I did my undergrad degree in industrial engineering.
Yeah.
And so here's this person that ran track. So I understood competition, understood performance. I love track because there is no politics.
Yeah.
You start the line. Who's ever get to the next line first wins.
Yeah.
It's not about who you know. It's not about the judges. Just straightforward, straight pure competition. Yeah. I love that. I'm now graduating university. I'm working at Procter & Gamble. And Procter & Gamble felt like a series of competitions.
Yeah.
We're making Zest bar soap. We're trying to push. I can't give you the specifics, but we're busting our butt to save a tenth of a penny on the case count.
Yeah.
So like we're driving down and our manufacturing cost would have been a small part of the overall cost. But
right.
That's my competition. Drive down case costs. What do we do? I'm managing at 22, 23 years old, a team of 25, 30 people,
yeah.
All my parents' age and my grandparents' age. And
yeah.
We're just driving. And we're just driving.
Yeah.
P&G, they rewarded that drive. And
yeah.
They rewarded the drive. You work about a year, 18 months. If you do well, you get promoted. You work another year, 18 months. You do well, you get promoted. I'm now five and a half years into Procter & Gamble, and I'm managing people that's managing people that's managing the engineers that I used to be.
Yes.
I don't know anything about management because I was this engineer that just ran fast. And so what do engineers do that want to know about management? You go get an MBA. And so I'm in Kansas City. I'm doing Zest bar soap. I went to the local school, University of Missouri at Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
I took a class called Principles of Management.
Right.
And I thought, people get paid to talk about leadership and strategy and change management. I want that job.
Yeah.
So I quit Procter & Gamble. quit the MBA, and then for the most part, because I did my undergrad at Northwestern,
right.
I went back to Northwestern to get this PhD in organizational behavior. It ended up being a joint degree between organizational behavior and sociology, because I was really interested in broad shifts, not like individual shifts.
Right.
Now I'm at, you know, PhD, and a couple of colleagues that I used to work at Procter & Gamble with, I find out they quit P&G around the same time I did. The wife to get her PhD in industrial engineering, so planning and scheduling, him to start this consulting. He asked me if I want to be involved in consulting, and this became the two lives of Marvin. I tell people, if you Google Scholar me, you'll see a lot of the academic articles, you know, in the Academy of Management Journal, in organizational science, the sort of boring academic stuff. If you Google me, you'll then see my desire to translate that to real companies.
Yeah.
So where did that come from? I'm working in bar soap. Imagine a football field covered over in dozens of pieces of equipment. It's noisy.
Yeah.
The worst day at work was a day of quiet, because that meant it was broken. That means we're not making any soap. Yeah. I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
But as a professor, most of my life is quiet. I'm in a room by myself on a computer reading or writing. Maybe I go into a classroom and talk to some people. I just miss the noise.
Yeah.
And so when people started asking me to come and sort of take what I know from the academic world and to bring it into the real world, I jumped at that chance because I wanted to figure out, well, what's your noise? What's keeping you up at night? What's the stress in your world? And then what I started to do was started to try to make sense of it.
Yeah.
And so I spent 2.5 years of my life over a 15-year period in the country of Botswana.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty much in the country of Botswana, helping the country, all the different ministries, do strategic planning, leadership development, through change management. And it really ended up being the first week I'm meeting with key leaders, figuring out their noise. Mm-hmm. What's their stress? What's bugging them? And then now I'm going to shine, because now I'm going back home and I'm going into the literature. Do we have an answer to this question? Do we not have an answer to this question? What can we put together answers to this question? And then I go back and provide some insight. And I did that sort of 15, 20 years of the sort of academic Marvin and then a consultant Marvin.
That's right.
And they both came together because Portland State said we like both sides.
Yeah.
Portland State basically said, hey, could you come to Portland? We think we have enough business to keep you interested, and we have enough academic rigor to keep you interested. And this is a place where both sides of Marvin get to come together.
And you used to teach, my understanding, Marvin, you used to teach when you were consulting after P&G. And my understanding is you used to teach family offices on CEO strategy.
Oh, yes.
You taught at the University of Alberta.
Yeah.
I mean, you really dug in into strategy. Yeah. So, you know, that I just wanted to highlight that for our guests is like, here you are, because we're, you know, the private equity venture capital. This guy used to teach family offices how to get it done.
Yeah. No, this was, I'm sorry, I cut you off. But this
no problem.
One of the funniest experiences. So I get invited to teach at a university in Mexico called Anahuac University.
Yeah.
And people would tell me that's the Yale of Mexico. That's
what
everyone would say. It's the Yale of Mexico.
Like, cool.
And so I would go there and I would teach as part of their CEO college.
Right.
And then I remember one time they said, well, you know, of course it didn't quite translate, but their translation was, could I teach the CEOs? And then the next week, teach the children of the CEOs.
Yeah.
And in my mind, I'm thinking, why would like 14-year-olds want to know what I'm getting ready to say? And then it dawned on me, these are multi-billion dollar family firms.
Yeah.
Because most of the big businesses in Mexico are family firms.
That's right.
So the children was basically their succession planning. Mm-hmm. You've talked to the CEO. Now please come talk to the COO, the senior vice president that when mom or dad dies will take over the business.
Yes.
Oh, this makes way more sense to me now in terms of why we'd be talking to the children of the CEOs.
Right.
I did that for about 4 or 5 years. I taught at Texas Tech. I taught at the University of Alberta. This has been what's motivated me in some sense is to find a location that allows me to sort of engage in the academic literature, but also keep a hand in the practitioner world. Because I can't, probably because since I came from Procter & Gamble, I can't just stay theoretical.
That's right.
As much as I appreciate that we need to understand the theory, it needs to make sense to the business owner. It needs to make sense to the boards. I spent the last couple of years, we have a Institute of Corporate Directors. So if you want to sit on a board, I spent the last couple of years when I was in Alberta teaching people how to be great board members. Awesome. So you're now on the board of a company. What's your role? Yes. How are you thinking about strategy? Because if you're on the board, you're not the CFO. So you're not looking at the reports, but you're helping the CFO. You're not the COO. You're not in the plant on the floor, but you're providing advice to them. So I did that for a couple of years.
And
that's
sort
of been my journey for the last 25 years or so.
Dang, that's cool. And that's one of the things about being an effective board member that you've certainly enlightened me on over throughout my career as well, among many other things. We've talked a lot offline here, but I think a lot of our fans, so here you are, you've done consulting, you worked in multi-deca-billion-dollar companies, you've been published, you're a speaker, you've done all of these things, you're a highly sought-after guy, you got a PhD. I can keep going, man, you're a big deal. So one of the things, why we're here and we're talking about strategy and strategic planning, especially for funders and for founders, a lot of people get confused with what strategy is. And more importantly, I'd love to know what strategy is not. So in your opinion, what is strategy? What is not strategy? Just a real high level summary before we really go deep on helping our fans understand this.
That's a great question. I'm going to add a word in. And once I add in the word, then I can answer your question.
Okay.
And the reason why I want to add the word in is I think we focus on strategy a lot. Yeah. I think we need to first focus on competitive advantage. Because that's what you're trying to do.
That's right.
Go back to my track and field days.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to do is win the race.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I now need a strategy of how to train to win the race.
Okay.
So strategy is not the goal of winning the race. That's your goal. Yeah. Strategy is, how do I win the race? Do I train on these days? Do I train on those days? Right. And with all of those come choices and come decisions and come what fits for me or may not fit for you. But the end result, though, is the plan is to win the race. That's my competitive advantage.
Yes.
And then once I get clear on that, then I need a strategy to get there.
Awesome.
I find so many businesses, they don't actually have a clear plan. They have a, what I call hope or wish for,
hope.
Well, we want to be great. Okay. What's your strategy? We want to be great. No, that's not your strategy.
Yeah.
Wanting to be great is a goal. It's a wish.
That's right.
The strategy is, what are the steps you're doing? What are the actions you're taking?
Yes.
What are the actions you're not taking?
Yes.
Because you realize that that's just noise and it gets in the way. And that's tough. That's tough for you, the founder, because as a founder, you're hustling. You're trying to grab everything and you're just trying to do everything. And you end up with, it's like me being the athlete. Well, I just run a lot.
No.
You got to have a clear. I do this. I don't do this. I do this. I don't do this. I'm now at this speed. So now I need to change my strategy to get to a next level of speed. I need to. And I think that analogy, if you can get at that, so because then it goes back to, now what strategy? Well, what race are you trying to win?
That's right.
Competitive advantage.
Yeah.
And then what's your plan to get there?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of feeling lost in the world of trading and investing? Get informed and inspired with the Talking Trading podcast. I'm Louise Bedford, and I'll help you navigate the markets like a pro. Tune in each week and subscribe now at talkingtrading.com.au or on your favorite podcast app, or check out the link in the show notes. Talking Trading, this is how traders excel.
So awesome. That is incredible. So what I'm hearing, and we want to make sure our funders and entrepreneurs understand this. When I was an executive,
just to compliment everything that you said, when I was an executive back in the day, you know, when I started just getting oriented, when I was brand new on the scene, is I would ask the board and everyone else, like, what's the strategy? And in this moment, it was like, well, we're going to get this revenue. We're going to grow by that much. And I was like, super cool. And so, of course, I'm hearing it. And to your definition, what you're saying is, no, when I ask executives, what's your strategy? And they start listing off what they're going to accomplish. Strategy is not a what. So your goals are the what. So if you're saying we're going to grow revenue by 100% year over year, whatever it is, great. That is not a strategy. So as long as you need both and you need goals. So goals are saying, here's what we're going to do and when we're going to do it. But then I would argue, and I think is what you're saying, is strategy is the how, or the approach to say, here's the approach we're going to take. And you may agree or not, but what I've found throughout my career is really great strategies and studying them, whether it be at military or business or otherwise, is saying it's even race. It's an exercise in lean management, saying, how do I go as fast as possible without expending saving as much energy in the tank? So in other words, how do we take this hill with the least amount of bullets and casualties fought? How do we grow our revenue by 50% without blowing our budget? So it's really an exercise to say, what's our approach? What's the most efficient way to accomplish our goals? And so having goals and strategy allows you to know what you want, and also have the conversation with your colleagues on what's the most efficient manner to accomplish those goals. Would you agree?
No, you're totally right. Right. The language I often use is, you're lean efficient. Mm-hmm. I would talk about, so we can block out the noise.
Yeah.
Right. In the world of business, there is so much noise out there. Why? Because people like me have a strategy. So there are 1,000 people like me that are just yelling in your ear, do this, do this, do this, do this. And they all make sense.
Yeah.
They may not make sense for you.
That's right.
And so you need a strategy to figure out, how do I filter? But we're not going to do that, because that doesn't make sense for us. We're really going to do this. This makes sense for us. And I love your analogy to military. Yeah. It really is, how do I take the hill with the least amount of casualties?
Because
you can take the hill, just throw a bunch of bodies at it. Yeah. And if you have more bodies than anybody else, but you know, a lot of businesses that just burn through a lot of cash.
Burn through cash. Why? Yeah. I was in oil and gas.
They're just running all over the place. They're just throwing money at everything and running all over the place. And then they run out of money and they go, we don't know what happened.
And we still didn't get our goal.
You never had a strategy. You never had a plan. You just said, I'll just throw stuff at this and hope it works.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love what you're saying. That's exactly right. Yeah.
There's almost a sarcastic phrase that says, revenue hides all sins. That's kind of to say, as long as you're selling, we don't need a strategy. Yes. We're making buckets of money. And it's like, really? Like, that's the most irresponsible thing to do.
Yeah.
And so given that context into funders and founders, so for example, venture capital, whether you're an investor or you're a startup, having this strategy is saying, like, what's the most efficient way that we can get our first customer? What's the disproportionate amount of output given the low amount of input? And when you're a founder, I mean, you got to be scrappy, man. You don't have a lot of resources. So you can make up for that with an excellent strategy that we're going to go into today. And so when we spoke offline a little bit, Marvin, you mentioned that you have this really cool trifecta framework that when you're consulting, be it governments or deca-billion-dollar companies, you often start with a three-pronged approach. And we're not going to have time to go over all three prongs, but maybe you can walk us through just high level, just like 60 seconds. What's that three-prong approach, and why does it matter to funders and founders?
Yeah. So this is my listening approach.
Yes.
And so what you just talked about, a client will come to me and they're going to bring all their noise to me.
Yeah.
We don't know why we're not successful. We don't know why we can't do this.
Yeah.
And then they'll bring their guesses. Well, I need a way to make sense of that noise in those guesses. And so I really have this triangle, and it's strategy, it's leadership, and it's culture.
Right. So that's where you start.
And I start there because I'm just listening. And they'll say things like, we have a strategy, but it's not working. It's the strategy's fault. And I'd be like, or maybe it's the culture fault.
Yep.
And you're clear on what you want to do, but people with you aren't doing that.
Yeah. You're not winning hearts and minds.
So I don't know if the goal is to get rid of the strategy. Or what I hear is the opposite so much.
Yeah.
We're all busy. We're all burnt out. Mm-hmm. We're just busy. I can't push them any farther. Mm-hmm. Well, it sounds like you have the right culture, but no one knows what the strategy is. And since no one knows what the strategy is, no surprise, everyone's just running all over the place.
Right.
And then no surprise, everybody's burnt out.
Yes.
Because what you were just saying, we're not efficient in terms of what our strategy needs to be so that we know that we're running in the right direction on the right things.
Yes.
And so I can't, in some sense, it's almost like dealing with the patient. The patient's going to say it hurts.
Yes.
But they don't know what really that means.
Yeah.
This triangle for me helps me get a sense of how it might be a leadership problem, how it might be a strategy problem, or it might be a culture problem. Because once I can figure out which one it is, then we can talk about how we're going to overcome that.
That's right. And so that excellent breakdown. So when you come in, it's kind of your first, like you said, a doctor, they're like, they just say it hurts. Here's where I start. I cover these three things. And you didn't say this, but I certainly will, as you're saying, almost all the time, it's a symptom of one or many or all, but
totally.
Somewhere between these three is where a lot of companies. And so if you're a startup, a founder, or if you're a venture capitalist who's going to sit on boards and you're listening, these are some good areas to start assessing investments or assessing your business to say, let's focus on structure, on culture, leadership, and strategy. Now, this goal. Or the goal of this conversation is we can't go into all of it or we'll be here for hours. But strategy, what is strategy? Like, do you have a simple makeup or formula of what strategy is?
And I start, so we're in the strategy bucket.
Yeah.
And it's overwhelming because you Google strategy, you get a trillion titles.
So many.
You know, it's just overwhelming. Yeah. So I say, I'm not going to debate that. I'm not going to fight you on your book favorite versus my book favorite.
Sure.
Because that's just wasting time.
Yeah.
I will tell you, when I conceptualize strategy, strategy is risk plus competition.
Interesting.
So competition basically means you're not the only one doing the thing you're doing.
Yeah.
So how are you beating others? Again, I go back to running. I'm not the only one in the race.
Right.
So it's not just enough for me to be fast. I have to be faster than the others in the race.
Yeah, if you're going to win.
Yeah, if that's not my goal to win.
Yeah.
And then the risk part is I am making decisions that if they work will be successful, but no decisions have a guarantee that they're going to work.
Right.
So, you gotta have to always decide, is this the thing? Because again, I love your phrase, when the money is there, I try 1,000 things to have the money.
Yeah.
But once the money is not there, I got to figure out where I'm going to put that money at. Where am I going to put those resources at?
Yeah.
And I find a lot of times on the risk side, the leaders are just hesitant.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if it's going to work. Of course, we don't know it's going to work. That's why it's called strategy.
Right.
Like it's we think it will. And because it will work, that's why we'll beat you.
That's right.
Yeah. And so once we get that aside, that to me is like the leadership part of it.
Yeah.
The competition part's the fun part. Because now we're designing a strategy. We're designing, how are you going to win this race? How are you going to have a competitive advantage over others in the industry, over others in this space? That to me is the fun part, if you will.
Well, let's talk about the fun part, man. Like, and especially if you're anyone who's interested in making billions, like you said, high level, all those matter. But, you know, we're going to kind of level two as we're saying, let's hone in out of those three, let's hone in on strategy, which is really risk plus competition. So let's go to third level. Why don't we, since it's the fun one, let's talk about competition and how that leads funders and founders to make billions. So when it comes to competition, what I've found, and you know, maybe you like this framework or whatever, but what I found is really there's a strategy, at least ones that I follow, and I'd love to get your opinion on, is really a discipline or a strategy of market leaders, which really says, hey, there's three angles that you should consider. You pick one that you're going to be known for. You're going to have a second one of this triangle that's going to support your primary objective. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to forget about the other one, right? You're not interested. And what those three things are is saying operational excellence or product leader. And the third one is customer intimacy. So it says, look, if you want to be operationally excellent, that's how you're going to win in your market, in your competition. You're going to be lean. You're going to be mean. You're going to be like Dollar General, if anyone's seen that in the insurance industry, right? You're going to offer probably low price, low low costs, everything's about driving down cost. And maybe that will be supported by customer intimacy. And then you forget about being a product leader. I would love to hear about some of your thoughts around operational excellence, product leader, customer intimacy, how that fits, and how we win. So maybe what are some examples you've seen?
That's a great example. And just like to connect to my definition of risk plus competition.
Yeah.
You've already set up an element of risk because I have to decide which two to pick.
Yeah.
And it's a question mark. No textbook will tell you if you're here, this is the one that will work.
Yeah.
Why? Because there are other competitors in your space.
That's right.
There are other people there. And as I tell people, especially that early founder, I said, what makes this fun for me and stressful for you is that customers are fickle.
Yeah.
Customers are fickle. They change their mind. We don't know. We hope, we pray, we guess. And it's the fickle part that you're trying to get in the mind of.
Yes.
And you're thinking, in this space, is it efficiency?
Yes.
Right? In this space, is it customer intimacy? In this space, is it sort of product leadership? Let's think about Walmart for a minute.
Sure.
Walmart's a great example of not customer intimacy.
That's right.
They're not. Whatever you want to say, you go into a Walmart, you are not expecting your customer service.
That's right.
And I imagine if you get it, that person won't stay there for long.
Mm-hmm.
Because Walmart's not going to reward that. Because Walmart's point is, we're not making our money off of you, the customer. I mean, you, the employee, spending hours helping the customer. That's not how we're making our money.
That's right.
We're working our money on stocking the shelves.
That's right.
We're making our money on the supply chain and driving the cost down. So what you go in the store for, you get cheaply.
Yes.
So as soon as we say the customer is always right, now when I go into Walmart, I go in there and nobody comes to help me. I just got to figure it out. But why do I do that? Because everything I want in the store and the prices are low.
Right.
So they've nailed the other one for sure. They're defending product. So you don't buy Walmart stuff. I still can get Tide in Walmart. I still can get other brand names in Walmart.
Yeah.
But not the customer intimacy.
That's right. And so now,
go ahead.
Yeah, no. And that is a strategy, right? So it's not that it's wrong.
Yeah. No,
and this is where companies get themselves into trouble is they're acting one way, believing. So they're approaching high-end clients while still trying to be the lowest cost provider. You're like, high-end clients don't go to Walmart, not because there's anything wrong with it, but they're saying there's an experience, right?
That's so not the client they're going
to.
For.
They go to Nordstrom to buy a shirt, not Walmart, because they want the more customer intimate. They're happy to pay more money.
Yep.
So if your organization as a leader, as a funder or a founder, if you set up your company to be customer intimate, that's probably a good approach for a high ticket item. But you're going to have to just be pouring love on your clients.
Yeah.
And maybe that's part. Because it's not just products. And I want to be clear, because we're talking about sales and revenue.
Yeah.
Really, strategy is the driver of that other section is culture. So it's not enough to just say operational excellence and you'll see our algorithms and our AI. You're saying operational excellence is a cultural thing. It's in the DNA of our company or customer intimacy, right? Yeah. You said Walmart, it's not in its DNA. Like, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with it. There's a lot of people looking for really cheap, right? Yeah. Dollar stores, all that stuff. That is a huge market and go for that market. And that's a great way to win. But you got to make sure that it's woven into your DNA.
Yeah. And the other example
ahead.
Of
that go
one,
ahead.
And I love it, is Zappos. So Zappos have said the exact opposite, customer intimacy.
That's right.
That's the one we're going to nail. And then we'll work on, probably my guess is, operational efficiency, because they're in the online space.
Yeah.
Product category. No one ever says they have the best shoes in the world. Like,
they don't have product. They just sell other people's products.
Exactly. But that's why now, if I'm Zappos, think about all the stories.
Yeah.
Somebody made a mistake. Instead of calling them, they wanted to call the pizza place.
Yeah.
So what does the Zappos employee does? They literally go and order the pizzas for them and deliver the pizzas. Well,
that's
why would
they
do that? Because they need that intimacy story. They need those customer stories, because that's what's driving the brand.
That's
what's driving. We all know people that, I was on the phone with the Zappos person because something happened with the order and I mentioned I was sad and they sent me a get well card.
That's right.
You are not getting a get well card from Walmart.com. Let's get real clear.
Because that's not the client.
That's not the client.
And
that's not what they're trying to defend.
That's right.
That's not the culture they're trying to create. Mm-hmm. And so that's why these three buckets, I love that, because it pushes you as an organization to decide which one is it.
Who are we going to be known
for? And as soon as you say we're going to be all of them, you become Sears.
Yeah. Yeah. And look where that got them.
Sears literally thought, well, you know what? We'll have the right products and we'll have good intimacy of customers and we'll be good in terms of our processes.
Yeah.
And they weren't good enough in any of the areas.
That's right. You just become just okay, but likely just miserable in all of them.
We call it stuck in the middle.
You become stuck in the middle.
You're not great on any area, and no one wants good enough.
Right.
Customers are fickle. I want to know purely that you care about me, or this is the cheapest, or this is the best product.
Yeah.
It's an okay product. It's okay. I don't want that. And so,
I love that. And, you know, to kind of keep rounding that out, one of the things I think you and I lightly touched on this is, you know, between someone who was known as a product or shifted their strategy. This is probably one of my favorite analysis of a company who shifted their strategy that worked and then it didn't. To talk about, I want to highlight the customers are fickle thing, is saying tastes can change faster than the product that meets those tastes. And one example of that, of having a good strategy but not nimble, is Netflix. Yeah. So in the early days, right, they were not a product leader, right? They were just peddling these like B-roll movies. Yeah. I remember in Canada, everybody was like, oh, you got to find a way to get the US one because it's better and all these different things. And then they came out and they did the risk like you talked about. And they said, hey, and some people were like, it's not going to work, when they came out and said, we're going to start producing original content.
Yeah.
Why? Now we can look back and people like us can talk about it and we can say they were trying to be a product leader. They wanted like A-roll exclusive stuff, create the walled garden and say only in our walled garden you can consume headlining things like Stranger Things, for example. Yeah. And so they became this product leader and they had these really good shows, and they still do. They still crank them out. And so they shifted their strategy and it did phenomenal for them. Yep. So now they became a product leader, right? They've got massive amount of clients that came in through their sales and channels by being a product leader. But then the not so obvious one is, what was their support? What was their kickstand to that strategy? Yep. Was it operational excellence or customer intimacy? I believe it was operational excellence. They were well known for this wonderful algorithm and their AI to suggest movies on this massive library. So they were number one. They wanted to be known as a product leader, and they did a very good job at that. And they supported it to this point of strategy, this triangle. They supported product leader by an operational excellence approach. Okay. So, from that, I'm curious. Now we're in a position, and this is why here I am raving about Netflix. People are like, dude, they just dropped like 70 or 80% in their value. What happened? Well, what happened, I think, and this is why we got to be nimble, is they continued on that strategy of product leader, and they were tailoring to the tastes. This back to your fickle thing is they're saying, there was this woke culture and a lot of that stuff. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just saying they were smart. They followed the trends. They followed the data. And they said, turns out a lot of people are enjoying this kind of new age stuff. Let's make content to support that. They're just running a business. They absolutely did the right thing. But the issue is your lead time for producing a movie does not change. You can't just like re-script and recast and build a new set. Now there's a shift in customer taste to say, maybe, those are shifting and, that was, the last couple of years, but maybe customers are into some new stuff now and they're still cranking out this old content. So they got smoked, and it's unfortunate because they did such a brilliant job. So there's an example of saying, you got to have a strategy, but you got to be nimble.
Yeah.
I'm just curious to get your insights on Netflix.
Now, there's another phrase, and we talked about this, and this is another framework to think about.
Yeah.
And it's not mine, but you've probably all heard the phrases. There's blue ocean and there's red ocean.
Mm.
A blue ocean strategy is a way to think about you being one of the first in the area.
Sure.
And when Netflix was first, they could command a lot of attention. Mm. They could make those movies at a relatively cheaper price because the actors and the directors that were making them didn't have other options.
That's right.
I just think they didn't realize that at some point they're not going to be able to get Seinfeld from NBC because NBC will create their own streaming service. Mm. They're not going to be able to get The Sopranos from HBO because HBO will create their own streaming services.
Yes.
They're not going to be able to get all of those cartoons from Disney because Disney's going to create their own streaming services.
Yeah.
What happened? That blue ocean turned red.
Ooh.
When that blue ocean turns red,
yeah,
that's a lot of money to pay for that content.
Yeah.
And so then what did they try to do? Oh, we're awesome. We'll raise our prices. Well, you can raise your prices when there is no other option out there.
Yeah, you can't.
And I can imagine they were sitting around the room. It's only a dollar. It's only a dollar 50.
People be
but people
cool.
are like, whoa, whoa, wait a minute here.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if I need Netflix movies at that price when I can just keep my fill in the blank Hulu, Prime, Disney. Apple. Like, there's a bunch of these options now.
Yeah.
But you're right. But they didn't think about the runway of the movies.
Yes.
They can't turn around in 6 weeks. They got a backlog of these movies
yeah.
that they've been making that they got to send out. So that's tough. I mean, if you're
that's
sitting in
point.
Netflix, you're like, okay, I guess we'll be bad for another two more quarters.
Because it's like
we have all of these movies
we got them yeah.
that we made 2 years ago that we got to get something from. We can't just never show them.
Yeah, you can't shelf right? them.
Yeah. And I think that to me goes back to the competitive advantage part.
That's right.
But all blue oceans eventually go red.
Ooh.
All you win, you will eventually get into a race where you will lose. And
that's
now
right.
what?
Well, you don't raise because your prices when your blue ocean turns
you
red.
You got it.
Which
you got it.
And for our listeners, there's many. This is a great strategy book. A lot of people use it. For those who don't know, it's called Blue Ocean Strategy. Mm-hmm. Basically, a blue ocean is a market where you don't have any competition. That's the mm-hmm. ideal place. Mm-hmm. A red ocean is there's blood in the waters. There's lots of competition.
Yeah. Yep.
So here they were. They're in a blue ocean. They were first. Mm-hmm. They managed to enter a blue ocean. And I would say, you know, they were one of the earlier creators of this. I don't know if they were the original, but mm-hmm. they were one of the first people to mm-hmm. enter and do very well in a blue ocean. Mm-hmm. Eventually, competition comes in. Blue ocean turns red. And the last thing you do is raise your prices when there's competition.
That's exactly right. When that blue turns red, we go back to the other two. Operational efficiency and customer intimacy.
So you got
to
shift your strategy.
Customer intimacy, they won't switch. I got to keep the ones I have. Keep the ones I have. Operational efficiency, I can't raise prices. I got to get those margins better at the existing price point.
Yes.
But what did you say earlier, though? And I love your phrase. When I got all this cash, revenue just takes care of everything.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I don't have the revenue. They're pulling their hair out. Now, what do we do? What do
right,
we do?
Right.
We got to make these choices. We got to make these decisions.
Yeah.
And you can just see, you know, so many other examples of companies that just didn't get there, right? We talked about Netflix. My favorite is Peloton.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Because when I often talk about strategy, I've been pushing competitive advantage.
Yes.
And we've been having this conversation about the three ways to do it. And good or bad, you take a billion pages of strategy research, you get those three ideas. They package them differently. They say it differently. But I'm either going to be well-known, and that's where you get to marketing, branding, that kind of thing. I'm going to have great customer service so that the people that want me will love me.
Yeah.
Think Starbucks in the Starbucks app.
Yeah.
Right? No other business out there has $1 billion of their customers' money waiting to be spent one coffee cup at a time.
That's
so
right.
Starbucks has mastered that customer relationship mm-hmm. so much so that I give them my money to buy coffee tomorrow. Crazy how they did that.
Yeah.
Operational efficiency. Whatever I have, I'm going to squeeze to get the best margins.
That's right.
So you decide is that. That's about what it is.
Right.
Now, a lot of people mask as if they have that.
Yeah.
And what they really have is either a locational advantage.
Mm.
So what is a locational advantage?
Yeah.
I have a coffee shop.
Sure.
They're not coming to my coffee shop because the coffee tastes well.
Yeah.
I'm the only coffee shop next to the bus.
Yeah.
I'm the only coffee shop next to the door where you walk, where there's a billion person tower that we're all going in.
Right.
We all got 15 minute break.
Yeah.
So no surprise. Everyone comes down the stairs and get the coffee from me.
Right. Selling umbrellas when it rains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you, oh, the coffee is so great. No, I'm the only coffee shop on the corner. So I have a locational advantage, right?
Yeah. Right.
Or I get the timing right.
Yes.
Peloton.
Right time, right place.
Peloton happened to be at the right time and right place.
That's right.
But go back to blue oceans turn red.
Yeah.
Peloton had this wonderful moment when they were awesome.
Yeah.
And they did not capitalize on it. And what happened? The world opened back up.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me that they didn't think through, we need a different strategy when the world opens up than the strategy that we had when the world was shut down.
Yeah.
World shut down. Customer intimacy.
Right.
World opens up. I can't be selling these $3,000 bikes.
Yeah, nobody wants that. Let's go to the gym.
You're going back to SoulCycle. So then, literally, they were raising the price of their bikes. Buy the t-shirt. Buy all of this stuff that people are like, no, because the world is in a different place than it was when I bought that bike.
Nice.
And they just didn't change their strategy. And I think it's because they thought they had a competitive advantage.
Yeah.
Operational efficiency, customer intimacy, product. And they had none of that.
Right.
They just got lucky.
That's right.
But that luck could have given them a couple of years to figure it out.
Right.
And they just didn't figure it out.
Oh, man. And so Peloton, they had that issue where they had a locational advantage. In other words, we're like, hey, if you want to work out from home, Peloton's one of a great price. And then all of a sudden the world shuts down. Everyone has to work out from home. So they were in the right time in the right place. And they're like, wow, we're a really great company. But what you're saying is like, you probably are a great company. However, you didn't really have a great strategy. It appeared to be a great strategy, but really what it was is you had a locational advantage. Is that, did I get that right?
You got it right. And this is where, you know, we've been talking about from the founder side, right? In some sense, from the owner side.
That's right.
You're sitting on the board. Mm-hmm. That's your role. Your role on the board is to say, do you really have a strategy or are you just lucky?
That's right.
Do you really have a strategy or is your strategy just picking the right location? Because it doesn't seem like your strategy is picking the best coffee.
That's not a strategy. Yeah.
You got it. Yeah. Is your strategy timing?
Yeah.
We need a strategy. So I'm on the board. I'm saying, hey, actually tell me what your strategy is. Oh, we hit certain quarter metrics. No, that could all be luck.
Yeah.
What's your strategy?
Yeah, yeah.
What are you doing to hit this? What's your approach? How do you know it's a robust approach? Yeah. Will this approach last when blue oceans turn red?
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this offline, but a great example of that, Tide.
Yeah.
So Tide laundry detergent.
Yeah.
Tide laundry detergent is the market leader. And I forget the stats, but you know, again, don't fight me on this, but some like 70% of all households have Tide in the household.
That's huge for market share.
So why are they still innovating?
Yeah.
Because they recognize that they still need to have their product leader.
That's right.
They said, okay, we can't keep selling powder Tide because what's going to happen is someone's going to come in with liquid. Somebody's going to come in with pods. Yeah. Somebody's going to come in with colors. Somebody's going to come in with, because Tide said, we have this for this customer, but in 20 years, in 10 years, in 3 years, there'll be a different customer.
That's right. And to your
Tide
point.
Tide got really smart. They looked around and they said, you know what? There is no one at home doing laundry all day.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's busy. Yeah. I can't be having them pour out a scoop and grab a thing, throw it in there and move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is awesome. So, you know, and you see this in a lot of excellent products, but I would argue really products come from excellent companies.
Yeah, exactly.
So these people who created Tide and for many of our funders and founders, like a lot of product and services, this still applies. Yes. And you see this in, you see this in a lot of, companies that are constant, they understand exactly what you're saying. It's just clicking with me is saying, hey, like, yeah, okay. So one thing you need to remember is right time, right place is not a strategy. That's luck. But to see it for what it is, if you're a funder or a founder. Number two is saying every competitive advantage eventually will go to zero, meaning blue oceans eventually turn to red because everybody, if there's money to be made, people are going to start flooding in. And so companies like Tide, and use that as maybe a metaphor for whoever our fans are listening to, your product and service, saying you might have a competitive advantage now, but what do? Well, now according to Dr. Washington, we're saying, hey man, just make sure you understand that the party doesn't last forever. Eventually you're going to get some competitors who are going to try to outbeat you. So what you do, and I would argue, and I'd love to hear your opinion on this, is saying, great, you got a great product. You got 70% market share in this thing. Great. Eventually, it's going to be a red ocean. What are you going to do about it? And the antidote to this, and I want our funders and founders to really listen clearly. The antidote to this, my friends, is to constantly disrupt yourself. So constantly invest in new products, right? There, we're like, oh, we get big bonuses. We're going to hire ourselves. We're making all this money. Yeah. Okay. Sure. Do whatever you want. But however, please allocate some of this to capital expense.
Yeah.
Do it to R&D, build and develop new products, disrupt yourself because there's people coming. They're going to disrupt you. You're going to get disrupted. It's easier to do it yourself than to have someone else come and completely wipe you out. So Tide, they built that. Then they had Liquid Tide. They had the Tide Pin. They had Cold Water Tide. They kept going, right?
And so they kept disrupting themselves, and that is how they maintained being a market leader, yeah. is they knew their oceans would turn red, and they were still one step ahead of it, constantly entering into new blue oceans nonstop. I absolutely love it. I'd love to hear your opinion on that and just round that up.
This is where the sport analogy is so perfect.
Yeah.
Because great athletes on the off season learn a new skill. Every offseason they come back. Okay. Oh, wow. They learned a new move. And all of a sudden now they do something. Because what do great athletes realize?
Yeah.
Well, I was so successful last year that all the teams are trying to stop me from doing that. Right. I can't just keep doing that. I got to add something to the portfolio. I got to add something else. And the athletes that we hero worship.
Yeah.
Compare them in year 10 of their career to year one.
Yeah.
They've literally become a different athlete. They learn different moves. They have different skills. They have... Those athletes that did the exact same skill forever, well, eventually I get slow.
Yeah.
Eventually I can't jump as much.
Yeah.
Eventually I got to learn something else. So you in your business, and this is, again, this is where when I'm talking to advisors of businesses.
Sure.
When I'm talking to you sit on the board, you have an advisory role. Yeah. That's your job.
Yes.
The owner, if I'm the owner, my head's down. I'm trying to make this thing work.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make the first tide. Forget about the 13th tide.
Sure.
I'm the advisor. I'm reminding you about the one around the corner.
That's right.
I'm reminding you, hey, is this the time to move?
Yeah.
Is this the time to come out with that second one? Is this the time to start extending this? You know, I can't wait until we crash to rebuild. I got to be rebuilding before we crash.
That's right.
And so I'm thinking, and that occurs even in the early moments, even in the small scale. Sometimes we think, no, I got to become huge and stable first and then do it. Might be too late.
Yeah.
Why? Because we both know the world changes too fast.
That's right.
And I got to be ready for when the world changes, right?
Yeah, like Netflix that we talked about.
Yeah, like Netflix,
they were just too slow. They had a great strategy, but they weren't as nimble as maybe they need to be. I'm sure they're very well aware of that now. Their shareholders are reminded.
I think Netflix is a great example of, I imagine they'll eventually get it right.
Yeah,
but
I think
about the loss of value for the last year and the next couple of years.
Yeah, it's been painful.
Because now they're having to do it versus having already planned for when do we turn over? When do we go into this other business? Because this one is starting to look like the growth isn't there. Mm-hmm. What do you mean? It's still 25% growth. Yeah, but the last 5 years, it was 45% growth.
Yeah.
So maybe 25% sounds great.
Right.
Not as great. Or we had two competitors. Now we have 20.
Right.
We can still win, but we got to fight differently with 20 competitors in the space.
Different approach.
Had two competitors in the space.
That's right. Wow. So what happens, in your opinion? I love this. I'm sure. I mean, I can tell here, but maybe our fans could tell. Get pretty excited. I love talking about strategy, and especially with you, man. This is awesome.
No, this has been fun.
Yeah. So what happens? So we talked about time. We said, look, the two things you need to remember is locational advantages are just locational advantages. Maybe you got lucky. Maybe you're smart, but that could burn out pretty quick. Mm-hmm. Number two, your competitive advantage eventually will go to zero. And so the antidote to that is really just disrupt yourself. Get ahead of that disruption curve. Mm-hmm. Whether you're a funder, a founder, a board member, all of these things matter to anyone listening to the show. Mm-hmm. So what happens from your experience, your deep experience, what happens when a blue ocean turns red?
Yeah. So to me, when a blue ocean turns red, operational efficiency becomes more important because often when a blue ocean turns red, that means that the average customer is okay with the product.
Yeah.
I lived through this with computers.
Okay.
When computers first came out, you put IBM on the computer, you were going to charge a whole lot more than some other computer.
That's right.
I don't even know if IBM was better. I just knew the name IBM. I trusted it.
Yeah.
Now, I don't even know the name of the computer.
Whatever.
They're all about the same. They all do about the same work.
Yeah.
And so then if you're selling computers now, your brand name, product leader, may not be what gets it.
Yeah.
Operational efficiency, effectiveness will get there. Wow. I got to squeeze more margins. I got to get better. No surprise, you don't buy a computer in a store anymore.
Yeah.
Because that's just a way to cut costs, right?
Yeah.
Why carry any inventory?
Which
is crazy to think about, that we used to go into a store, look at it, and then we would take it home, and then we'd have 14 discs to update everything because the one they had in the store was 2 seasons old.
Yeah.
customer intimacy. How do I keep my customers?
Yeah.
What do I do to keep my customers? Wow. What do I do to hold on to the ones I have while I'm moving? That is a, that's what's, again, we go back to Netflix.
Yeah.
Raising price was not the right answer.
No.
While they're figuring it out, they can't be figuring it out off of my back.
Right.
And they're basically saying, oh, we need more money. So, hey, Marvin, we're not giving you what you want, but please pay more so that we can figure out what you want.
Right.
That's probably not the right way to do it.
Yeah, that was a misstep. And they paid dearly in the market.
And they're literally paying dearly for that,
they're
right?
Hemorrhaging.
Peloton, same thing. Yep. While Peloton is figuring out what their new reality is, because not only do we have a bunch of other bikes, and now we know how you can ride in the bike at home because other people figured it out, we now can go back and ride in the gyms like we used to.
That's right.
So Peloton, what's the first thing they did? Slash the price of their bike.
That's right.
Because we gotta hold on to the customers that we think we're going to get while we're figuring out what our competitive strategy is. If I could leave, you know, especially you, the owner, the founder, right? Yeah. If I can leave you with something to think about, the path to billions is through different strategies.
Mm.
It's not the same strategy all the way through.
That's right.
When you have a quirk of an idea and nobody's watching you, you can do whatever strategy you want. And all of a sudden people go, oh, that service over there seems interesting. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should think about adopting that similar service because we have the brand name recognition. Mm-hmm. Now I need a different strategy. Now all of a sudden you're getting close to that first billion.
Mm.
Okay. As I joke, now we need adults in the room. Because now it's no longer hustle. It's no longer energy. Now it's policies and procedures and processes and keeping the talent. That's the reason why we made this money. And so many founders struggle because they think they're going to hustle their way through. And the employees like, we hustled when we were young. I got a mortgage now, man. I need something more than just hustle to keep this thing going.
Yeah.
So now I need a different strategy.
Right.
And so if I can leave you with thinking about strategies, not I'm going to get one strategy.
Yeah.
And that's the, again, that's why the word sometimes go in and out of favor.
Yeah.
Because I think people get frustrated with, well, we had a strategy. And yeah, that's right. You had a strategy. Today's a different world.
That's right.
And so we need a different strategy.
Yeah,
a different approach. And as soon as you figure out that strategy, you'll be successful. How long would it last until the world changes again to a different strategy?
Right.
Yeah.
I love that. So here we are. We say, look, when a blue ocean turns red, right, your competitive advantage is going to zero. The competition, there's sharks in the water, there's blood in the water. Yeah. Really, then you shift from whatever you were, but now you probably, this is the right time to focus on operational excellence to improve your profit margins. So for our funders and founders and board members and everybody around the world that are listening to this is a good strategy to do is say, find your blue ocean, go make a buckets of money, but then when the tides change or the blue turns to red, start to focus on operational excellence. And I think what I'm also hearing is saying, in that moment, if you're a founder, that's probably the time, as you said, to bring the adults in the room to say, meaning not necessarily in a condescending way, but you're just saying bring someone a little more experience.
Yeah. That understands how to work in that world, right?
Exactly.
In a very practical sense, the world that you grew this company up in is a different world.
That's right.
But because you're in the different world now, you may not be able to adjust as fast as if you brought somebody on that understands how to navigate that world.
Right. So it takes it from,
it's a speed question, right? So again, I think about, the pace doesn't get slower.
Yes.
Right. Again, hockey, basketball, baseball, whatever sport you want.
Yeah.
The field has stayed the same since high school.
Yeah.
So what's changed? They move faster.
The speed.
Things move faster.
Right.
So the speed you use to get your first significant amount of revenue, it only gets faster to get your second significant amount of revenue.
Yeah.
The other one is, and we go back to strategies, risk plus competition. The biggest risk is to go find another blue ocean.
Yeah.
And you can appreciate why that's a risk, because your customers know you for this ocean.
That's right.
So we were talking about Netflix.
Yeah.
As much as I may not like Netflix, I know them for movies.
Right. And
as
what are they
Netflix
doing?
Netflix says, oh, let's go into games.
That's right.
Oh, let's go into music. Yeah. Oh, let's go into, well, That's not why I have Netflix for games. I have my Apple for games. That's not why I go to Netflix for music. I have Spotify for music. I have Pandora. I have.
Yeah.
But you can see why they would do that. Is they're going, this ocean got red. Let's go find something different.
That's right.
That's a big risk. And that's why I talk about strategy is risk plus competition. We've talked a lot about the competition part. We can't neglect that it is a risk.
And I would add to that, Marvin, I would add that, you know, there's a difference between doing it when your share price drops 77% versus doing it when your share price is strong. And that kind of comes in to say, hey, man, because it's not a good look, right? And the investors, they're smart. So funders are saying, look, you're doing it because you currently, it looks like you ran your current product into the ground. You had incompetent leadership, whatever it is. It's not good, the perception. And now you're looking for some other thing and some kind of lifeboat. But when you're doing it, if you have that discipline that we talked about, is saying, like Ty did, is to say, no, like when it's going down, you're too late. Like try keep investing in new products, testing these things with your customers, keep entering into new blue oceans. And then, you know, when the time is good, you'd say, oh, we just moved on to something better rather than it went down. You rode that wave too long. There's no more energy left in this thing. Yeah. You were not quick and nimble on changing your strategy. Now you're paying the price and you just look desperate. So launching new products and services.
And I love your idea about internal disruption, right? Like
that's right. That
what you're describing is you're always thinking disruption.
And that goes to culture.
Waiting until you have to think disruption.
Right.
If you wait until you have to, it's too late.
It's too late. It doesn't look good.
It's too late. Not that it doesn't look good. You're approaching it from a deficit position.
Yeah.
So that's like going to the grocery store when you're hungry.
That's right.
Everything looks good and you're not going to cook any of the stuff in your cart. You want to go to the grocery store when you're not hungry because the stuff you'll put in your cart are the things you'll actually use, the recipes you'll actually make. So it is not that it just doesn't look good. You're not going to be successful at it because you're grabbing literally the phone calls I get, unfortunately, are in that space.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking there is no quick tomorrow we will solve this. And I know you're calling me because you're desperate and you want to solve this tomorrow.
That's right.
We can solve this, but how much money you got? How much time you got? Because we're not solving this tomorrow. 3 months ago, we could have solved this soon because then you would have been in a different position.
Yeah.
Your business would have been in a different position.
Yeah.
Your funders would have been in a different position with the confidence they would have had in you.
Yeah.
Now, you're asking a lot of people to trust you when you're not successful with the previous business.
Yeah. So what does that mean? So what does all of this mean to both funders and founders?
Yeah. So I'll start with the founders.
Sure.
I think with the founders, you're doing two things and you have to be clear on the two things you're doing.
Yeah.
Step one, I'm just trying to win this race today.
Sure.
I don't care what my form looks like. I don't care what it is. If I am playing basketball, I'm trying to put the ball in the basket. Mm-hmm. But that won't be sustainable without a strategy. So I need to, at the same time, think about how do I make that sustainable? How do I make that reproducible? And that's what we get to blue ocean, red ocean. That's what we get to. What are my advantages? Because I'm trying to make that thing that I'm doing that I care about. It's my baby. I'm passionate about it. I got to make it sustainable. And I think the sustainability question, sometimes people don't ask until it's too late, until their ability to do what they're doing isn't there. Locational advantage is Peloton. Peloton wasn't thinking about sustainability in 2020. They should have been thinking about sustainability in 2020 and not wait till 2022. Wow. If I'm a funder, I'm the one that's looking around the corner because the thing I'm funding, they're thinking today. They're trying to solve today's problems. They're on the phone with the angry customer today.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm not on the phone with the angry customer. My value added is what's coming tomorrow.
That's right.
My networks, the world I walk in. I know those adults in the room. Mm-hmm. So I know, you know what? For you all to be successful, this might be the time to bring on a CFO.
That's right.
I know you've been managing everything, but in the other companies that I've been working with, this really might be the time to bring on a CFO because you can't keep doing all the financials and understanding the risk of all of that and trying to win this immediate game. It's too big for you now.
Wow.
That's what you're doing as the funder. You're looking around the corner. You're thinking about what's next. you're in spaces that you don't expect that founder to be in, because that founder is 100% in this existing space. How do I win this existing race?
Yeah,
I don't get a second race if I don't win the first race.
I love that.
As a funder, you're the one thinking about the second race. You're the one thinking about the third race.
That's right.
Yeah.
I love that. And so, you know, rounding out that thought, just from my perspective on that, is, you know, as a funder, especially in VC, often we go and sit on boards of the companies that we're on. And so to provide guidance. So what does that mean to, if I can add my own spin on that?
Yeah, definitely.
Sitting on boards, providing that guidance and helping them, pushing them to disrupt themselves would be one.
Yes.
Number two is, as a funder myself, one of the things I look for is how much of your culture and your strategy promotes you to continually to innovate. Sure, you sound like you got a good product, whether it's software, whatever, or some solar power invention, whatever it is. But what are you? What's the likelihood that we can continue to have add-on, complementary, or disruptive things, and we can disrupt ourselves? Do they have the culture? Do they promote that? Is it all the executives are amazing, or are there staff here that they're promoting to say, hey, we want to hear good ideas. How do we promote so we disrupt ourselves?
Yeah.
And then ultimately, another thing that I look at as a funder and founder should too, is does the leadership rely too heavily on one product? Like you said, Peloton, do they rely on one product and then that makes them believe that they were smart because, but in reality, they just got lucky, right? Like you said, to the locational advantage. Yeah. So those are some things that, you know, I've learned and I'm pulling out from you is saying for funders and founders, if you're on the board, push these people to disrupt themselves. If you're not and you're a founder, think about how do I promote culture of constant disrupting ourselves before our competitors do? And we can be more like the Tide product of our industry and just constantly keep innovating and entering new blue ocean markets. So as we round out and we kind of round third base and head home, is there anything else that you would like to add? I'd love to just hear any closing remarks before we wrap things up.
Yeah. First of all, this was a blast.
This
was just fun, right? Like I think those of you listening out there, this podcast, wonderful, awesome. Watch the other ones. This is just awesome. I mean, I think the hearing you talk is just getting me so like excited because I think what's really hard for founders to do that's had a little bit of success is to become self-critical. Right? It's because how do you not believe your success?
Yes.
How do you not think that you have the Midas touch? How do you not think that you're successful because you had a little bit of success? And a lot of what we've been talking about are things to sort of be on the lookout for so you don't start believing your success. Don't start believing that whatever I do is wonderful because the last two things I did was wonderful. Well, someone has to come along and say, there may not be you. There may be timing. There may not be you. There may be fickle customers. There may not be you. There may be the fact that there were just no other competitors.
Yeah.
And what we're giving you a way to think about is that just not to fall in love with your success, although admittedly you have some success.
Right.
How do I know that? You're attracting VCs. You're attracting funders.
They like
so you've had some success, but don't fall in love with it because that's not the end goal.
That's right.
When I used to coach, and if I can end with an analogy,
right?
I used to coach girls basketball, and I would get girls that would come to me and they would tell me about their best game.
Yes.
They score 30 points, score 40 points.
Sure.
I would ask them about their worst game.
Mm-hmm.
And they would say, oh, I was sick. Oh, my mom didn't give me the... No. I think your best game was against crappy competition.
Yeah.
I think your worst game was against great competition.
Right.
So I think you actually are as good as your worst game.
Mm.
What we've been talking about here for founders in some sense is don't be falling in love with the initial success.
Right.
Because there's way more out there to be thinking about. And we've couched that in terms of strategy. And I love your words right at the end because it's a great sort of reminder.
Yeah.
And because you're more than one person,
yeah,
that strategy connects to a culture. The strategy connects to a leadership. You, the funder, you, the VC, you are around the corner. You're not in the business.
That's right.
You're advising. You're keeping them honest. You're keeping the integrity in the process not being overwhelmed by the product or the service.
Yeah.
This has been yes, I will have so many people watch this, not for me, but just your insights to this conversation has been great.
Yeah,
really
thank
helping.
You.
It really is helping owners, I think, get through the noise.
Sure.
And as a founder, there's a lot of noise, and we've been talking about different ways to get through the noise: blue, red, competitive advantage,
yeah.
You know, strategy, culture, leadership. Just ways to sort of get through the noise. It's been wonderful to have this conversation.
I love it. Absolutely. Yes. And what a treat you've been to many of our fans. You've been very generous with your time. And, you know, for those of you, if you want to learn more or get to meet Dr. Washington, he's not only a professor, but you're a professional speaker. You're an author. You've done many things. You do consulting. So I think you said just Google Dr. Marvin Washington. Yeah. Dr. Marvin Washington is the right one. There's other Marvin Washingtons out there. Dr. Marvin Washington, you've been an absolute pleasure. Well, that's enough for me, everybody. So, you know, as we round out this conversation, learn what blue ocean strategies are. Don't confuse that and think that your goals are a strategy. Your goals are goals. Your strategy is your approach to accomplish those goals, usually rooted in some lean thinking. Be focused and build a culture on constant disruption. This in itself is a strategy. It ensures that you are ready for the blue ocean to turn red. Build that culture and offer that's focused on operational excellence, product leader, and what was the other one? Operational excellence, product leader, and customer intimacy. So make sure that you're clear, your whole company is clear on those three things. Pick one, support the other, and then neglect the third, and you too will be well on your way in your pursuit of making billions.
Wow, what a show. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Now, if you haven't done so already, be sure to leave a comment and review on new ideas and guests you want me to bring on for future episodes. Plus, why don't you head over to YouTube and see extra takes while you get to know our guests even better. And make sure to come back for our next episode where we dive even deeper into the people, the process, and the perspectives of both investors and founders. Until then, my friends, stay hungry, focus on your goals, and keep grinding towards your dream of making billions.